from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, we look at this morning's indictment of President Trump's longtime advisor, Roger Stone, by special counsel Robert Mueller, and what it means for the president and whether his campaign coordinated with Russia to meddle in the 2016 election. Then at 9:30, state investigators say a private electrical system, not PG&E equipment, caused the deadliest and most destructive wildfire of the October 2017 firestorm. We look at what this means for fire victims and the utility's future. That's all next on Forum. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. A federal judge has released Roger Stone on $250,000 bond. He's the longtime ally and informal advisor to President Trump, and he's expected to speak shortly. Stone was arrested at his home in Florida this morning by the FBI and charged with 7 counts, including obstruction of an official proceeding, making false statements, and witness tampering. We look at the significance of today's events with Lisa Kern Griffin. She's a law professor at Duke University School of Law. Good morning, Lisa Kern Griffin.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. We're also joined by Greg Miller. He's national security correspondent at The Washington Post. He covers the Post's intelligence beat, and he's also the author of The Apprentice, Trump, Russia, and the Subversion of American Democracy. Good morning, Greg Miller.
Good morning.
I'd like to start with you. This indictment centers on Roger Stone's efforts to find out when potentially damaging Hillary Clinton campaign emails would be released by WikiLeaks. Of course, what's getting a lot of attention is how close these charges come to the president. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, there's a really interesting line that appears in this indictment that says that a senior Trump campaign official was directed to contact Stone to pursue information from WikiLeaks about whether there were additional releases forthcoming. So it's that reference to a senior campaign official being directed to contact Stone that makes, you know, raises again the question, where does President Trump figure in all of this? What points to him? What did he know? What was his level of involvement? And when did he know it?
So talk about the timing of these emails, these exchanges, these conversations, because it's quite curious the way it aligns with certain activities in the campaign.
Right. So that happens on July 22nd, which is right after the first big WikiLeaks dump, and only a few days before Trump himself utters the infamous line, you know, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you can find those missing Hillary emails. So, I mean, there's a lot of smoke coming out of this 1 week during the campaign now.
And Lisa Kern Griffin, so we have basically Roger Stone communicating with WikiLeaks during this timing, as Greg Miller points out. We know that Russia provided WikiLeaks with these stolen emails from the Hillary Clinton campaign. So what does this tell us about Roger Stone's connection to Russia or Russian involvement in meddling in the 2016 election?
Well, the indictment reveals communications that suggest that Roger Stone was in contact with the conduit that Russia was using to deliver the hacked emails. The indictment itself, though, is focused at this point entirely on protecting the congressional investigations, which is sort of a new dimension to the special counsel's priorities, and on the dishonesty that Roger Stone demonstrated and his efforts to impede those investigations.
So it does not accuse Stone directly of conspiring with WikiLeaks or with Russia in any way or anything like that?
Well, formally, he's not charged with hacking or conspiring with WikiLeaks or, for that matter, with the Russians. However, as with many of the indictments in the special counsel's investigation, there's a narrative thread in the indictment, and there are some facts revealed, including something that was pretty widely known publicly. Some of these messages had already been out in the public domain, but including these very clear statements, at least on Roger Stone's part, about his ability to communicate with WikiLeaks.
And what are the consequences if a political campaign accepts foreign aid of any kind?
Well, it depends on the circumstances. There are a variety of different ways in which that could have legal consequences. There are, of course, campaign finance implications. It's against the law to accept aid from a foreign government or foreign operator of any kind. If there was some sort of an exchange of a quid pro quo for the assistance, if there were any pledges or promises made about future treatment of sanctions, any other exchange, then that's a much more serious offense that would also be a federal violation, more like bribery.
And again, Lisa Kern-Griffin is a law professor at Duke University School of Law. We also have Greg Miller with us, national security correspondent at The Washington Post. This is a half-hour segment, and I want to open our phone lines now to invite our listeners to join the conversation with any reactions, questions, comments they have about this latest development. Our phone number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook. You can tweet us at KQED Forum, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. We're joined now by Eric Swalwell. He is the congressman, of course, representing Alameda County. He serves on the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees. Good morning, Representative Swalwell.
Good morning.
Thank you for calling in. I want to ask you, of course, one of the charges says that Stone lied to Congress. He lied to your committee about questions you asked. What is your reaction to that?
He was lying to protect candidate Trump and President Trump. And we see now there was an intense effort by the Trump campaign and Roger Stone to work overtime to get their hands on Russian-hacked emails to benefit Donald Trump. And then as our investigation and Mueller's investigation began, there was just as intense of an effort to take out the shovels and bury all of that evidence. And so lying to Congress has consequences. Roger Stone is paying the price of doing that, but I suspect that he will not be the last person to do so, and he wasn't even the first, because Michael Cohen did the same thing. And so it is refreshing to see people being held to account and making progress on better protecting the ballot box for the upcoming election.
Yes, people being held to account with Democratic power now in the House. What are you going to do about these revelations?
Well, we're going to do the investigation that should have been done 2 years ago to protect the ballot box as a determined adversary seeks to attack us again. And you know, this is always going to be about the future, and understanding how you protect against a future attack means understanding who the Russians worked with last time, what tactics they used, whether our response as a government was adequate. And so we're going to fill in the gaps, get the documents and witnesses that the Republicans didn't allow us to pursue. And as you take a step back and read this indictment, you see that even with what little subpoena power we had, as few of questions that we were able to ask, that we have been able to find in our investigation that two critical witnesses lied to us. And so that tells me that, you know, there's a lot more to learn, and there was a lot more that these individuals were probably seeking to protect.
Eric Swalwell, he represents the East Bay. He is the congressman for the Bay Area, and he sits on the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you.
And I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation now, starting with Rashish in San Jose. Hi, Rashish.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. My question is pretty simple. If everything sort of ties back to Trump in the end, what's the implication? What's actually going to happen? Is it just going to be like a fine? Is any of the laws or things that he put in place, is any of that going to be sort of removed or revoked? Or is it just something that he's going to be able to talk his way out of, get away with?
What's going to happen? Greg Miller, do you want to respond to Rashish? Greg Miller at The Washington Post.
Yeah, sure. So a lot depends on what we learn when Mueller is finished. I think that the House right now under Democratic leadership is really waiting for that process to play out. But, you know, you could easily envision if there is evidence here that the House would move toward impeachment proceedings against the president. And that's, you know, that's going to go through committees like the one that Eric Swalwell, who you just had on, sit on. So, I mean, that's where this is all appears to be leading. And, you know, already when you look at the broader outlines of this story, what happened today with Roger Stone, it just adds to the number of people who were surrounding candidate Trump in 2016 who have now been either indicted or pleaded guilty to serious crimes.
Yes, we have Michael Cohen, we have George Papadopoulos, Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, and as I understand it, Paul Manafort is also appearing in court today. Greg Miller.
Right. He was appearing in court today in relation to the status of the plea agreement that he had reached, which came into under renewed scrutiny after Mueller's team, the special counsel investigation, became convinced that he really wasn't cooperating the way they expected.
Well, let's hear from more listeners. We go next to Jerry in Mountain View. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question, is there any expected ramifications for Representative Nunez? Because it seems like he might have been impeding the progression of investigations by not allowing more questions for Roger Stone as well as other members or public that might have came before the committee.
Lisa Kern-Griffin, now that this has come out, do you see any ramifications for Devin Nunez?
Not directly related to this, that it's entirely the norm for members of Congress to ask artful questions or to endeavor to advance a narrative that is advantageous to them in the course of conducting these hearings. And ordinarily, they would not be held to account for not following through appropriately or for trying to coordinate somehow with allies.
And again, Lisa Kern-Griffin is a law professor at Duke University, and Greg Miller's with us, national security correspondent at The Washington Post. If you want to join the conversation or ask them your questions or give us your reactions, the phone number here is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum at kqed.org. Post your comments on Facebook, on Twitter, we're at KQED Forum, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm going to go next to Floyd in Galt. Hi, Floyd.
Hi. Quick question. Since Trump was advocating for the elimination of the Magnuson Act long before he became president, why doesn't he have the same problems as Paul Manafort of not registering as a foreign agent? And I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
Lisa Kern-Griffin.
Well, he wasn't, in fact, working, as far as we know, directly for foreign interests in the way that Paul Manafort and, to some extent, Michael Flynn were doing. He may have all kinds of exposure for contacts or promises that he made with respect to actions he would take as president to aid the Russian interests, but there's never been an allegation that I'm aware of that he was working directly as a representative of the Russian government at any time before, during, or after the campaign.
Lisa Kern-Griffin, does what we've learned today about Roger Stone, the timing of his desire to get information from WikiLeaks about when these hacked emails from the Hillary Clinton campaign would be dumped, does that shed any new light on the meeting that Donald Trump Jr. had with a Russian lawyer, which they said was around adoptions, but as we also know, was an attempt to try to get more information about Hillary Clinton?
I think that the WikiLeaks dimension of the investigation is actually somewhat different from the Trump Tower meeting that you're referring to. There are connections between all of these things in the sense that there were a variety of ways in which individuals connected to or working on behalf of the Russian government were communicating with the campaign and were offering assistance to the campaign. And there's a sort of aggregate effect of looking at all of these different events. The particular conduct that Roger Stone is charged with here, of course, is his dishonesty to Congress, and the new facts that are revealed are mostly not surprising or bombshells because much of this has been widely known, and Roger Stone has been all but daring the special counsel to indict him for some time, and obviously today Robert Mueller said he would take that dare. But I agree with Greg Miller that there is one new intriguing fact in this indictment, which is the passive was directed language, which adds someone above whoever the senior campaign official is, who we believe to be Steve Bannon, who was in communication with Roger Stone. Someone was giving directions to Steve Bannon to have those communications with Roger Stone, and there aren't a lot of possibilities for who that might have been. But unlike, for example, in the Southern District of New York, when it was made clear in Michael Cohen's plea agreement that the president himself had directed him to engage in illegal payoffs during the campaign, the special counsel put this in the passive voice and just says that he was directed, and we don't know who was doing the directing, and we have not gotten a straight answer about whether or not it's the president.
And we touched on this earlier, but if we do find out that it's the president, tell us what he would be potentially charged with as a result.
Well, again, it depends on the rest of the findings that the special counsel introduces into the equation. A lot of the things that tie back to the president are cumulative. In some cases, they're just evidence of his intent to impede the investigation in other settings. In this case, there's no charge of conspiracy to hack or of aiding and abetting the hacking. If there is some later part or component of the investigation where there is an offense involving the hacking itself, then those who were encouraging it or disseminating the information that came from it would be implicated in that. But more likely, I think this is just another example of the president and the president's associates, six of whom have now been charged with criminal violations, endeavoring to disseminate information obtained through hacking about a political opponent.
And Greg Miller, what do you make of the fact that the FBI raided Roger Stone's New York residence after this indictment?
Well, I guess I'm not surprised by that. We saw them do similar things with Paul Manafort. I mean, Roger Stone has seen this coming and has talked publicly for weeks, if not months now, about how he expected to be indicted. So it's not clear what the FBI would have expected to find at his residences. But, you know, this is part of their process. And if you'll let me, I want to go back to one of your listeners' questions about Devin Nunes.
Yes.
Because I find that fascinating, that was regarded as close to a sham sort of investigation that Nunes was running from the House committee. He is a Trump ally, loyal to the president, and has at times been doing as much as possible to cast doubt on the entire Russia inquiry. And here we have, you know, senior Trump campaign people stepping into serious legal trouble because of their interactions with Nunes' own committee. So here he's trying to protect the president, but you have presidential allies who were being tripped up by what they told his committee.
Do you feel like he faces ramifications, which was the question from our listener, as a result of this sham investigation?
I think it's interesting that the Republicans in the House have decided to keep Nunes on that committee, even though it is now democratically controlled, so he will just be the ranking member. I mean, you can only expect that he will see his role as to continue to undermine that effort at every turn. And I don't see any consequence from beyond that necessarily.
Well, this listener wants to know, what do you think are the prospects of Trump pardoning Roger Stone? Do you have any thoughts on that, Greg Miller?
Gosh, I mean, we of course, that's something that he has hinted at. He's praised Roger Stone for his strength or courage. I forget what language he's used. I mean, he's heaped scorn on Michael Cohen and called him a coward for cooperating with investigators. So there's been lots of kind of overt signaling to that end. Whether Trump ends up pardoning people will depend on many things, including the efforts of his lawyers and the extent to which he is listening to them as this sort of end game begins to unfold.
Well, Jorge writes, what is the proof, not innuendo or association, of the Russian government hacking emails and dumping emails at WikiLeaks? Lisa Kern-Griffin, U.S. officials have made that connection, correct?
They have. There's very detailed documentation of the troll farms in Russia and the impact that they had and the activities they engaged in, both via social media and through hacking itself. So disseminating information that is effectively stolen from the Clinton campaign and from the Democratic National Committee, and then, of course, attempting to manipulate voter behavior through Facebook and other social media outlets. So the special counsel has documented this extensively, and that is the subject of the indictments that were issued against Russian actors, none of whom are ever going to appear in court in the United States, but the charges themselves are helpful in understanding what happened.
Well, this listener writes, I keep wondering why the media doesn't link the obvious desire that Putin wanted U.S. assurances not to interfere into Ukraine. The fact that Trump's political advisors lobby hard to take those assurances out of the 2016 Republican platform and the quid pro quo of exposing the damaging hacked Hillary Clinton emails and other known interferences we know that Russian regime to have done. Greg Miller, that sounds like something for you.
I'm not sure. I mean, we're not raising it perhaps today in the context of the Roger Stone story, but that's something that's been covered extensively at the Post and by other news organizations and revealed largely because of the attention that news organizations have given to this whole story. But I mean, I guess it's a good point that, you know, we keep seeing breaking stories week after week, and this week it's an indictment of Roger Stone and his piece of this. But there is a much bigger and broader picture here that it's really hard always to keep in mind or to keep in full view, which is, you know, we now know that as a candidate, Trump was pursuing a business deal throughout the duration of the campaign, hoping for a tower in Moscow, that his campaign was holding secret meetings at Trump Tower with people who claimed to have dirt on Hillary, being in position to deliver that from Moscow, and extensive interactions with WikiLeaks well after it was abundantly clear publicly that Russia had hacked the DNC and was likely the source of all of this expunged material. It's a huge complicated but overwhelming picture when you step back and look at it.
Lisa Kern Griffin, we've heard the White House say this has nothing to do with the president. Do you think that holds water?
Well, I don't. He's been closely allied with Roger Stone for decades, and Stone has been an advisor of the president's, both formally and informally, at various points. And the conduct in question that's detailed in the indictment has to do with the president's campaign. So to say it has nothing to do with the president is obviously ridiculous. It's true that this particular set of charges is focused on Roger Stone's testimony before Congress and interviews with the House Intelligence Committee and his conduct surrounding that, and except for that intriguing reference to someone directing a campaign official to direct Stone to do something in the indictment, the president isn't discussed in this indictment. But all of it is part of a larger picture of the connections between the campaign and the hacking activity and other efforts to assist the campaign by Russia. So I certainly wouldn't say it has nothing to do with the president.
David in San Mateo, you're on with Forum. Join us.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My question is, Congress has the power to impeach, and if they do, great. But what happens when it gets to the Republican Senate, who has shown no spine in the last 2 years? I'll take my answer off air.
David, thanks. Greg Miller or Lisa Kern Griffin, who'd like to respond to David in our last 30 seconds?
I think he's right.
Lisa Kern-Griffin.
Of course, the House has the power now to impeach, but impeachment is effectively just an indictment. Without two-thirds of the Republican senators voting to convict the president, that is not the mechanism that is going to lead to Trump's removal from office.
Lots to watch, including a response from Roger Stone. Lisa Kern-Griffin of Duke University School of Law, thanks so much for talking with us this morning.
Thank you.
And thank you, Greg Miller, national security correspondent at The Washington Post.
Absolutely.
Greg Miller covers the Post Intelligence Beat and is author of The Apprentice, Trump, Russia, and the Subversion of American Democracy. We are next going to be talking about the Tubbs Fire and Cal Fire's finding that PG&E was not responsible for it. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.